All right. Well, for those of you listening, this is Scott and...
This is Patrick.
So, we thought we'd do another audio podcast here, and so you guys would have a chance to kind of see what we've been up to, our thoughts and feelings.
See what we've been up to?
Right. This actually might be a pretty long podcast, so we suggest you take it on a workout at maybe an hour run or... an hour bike ride, so we'll say about 6 mile bike ride or a 6 mile run and a 20 mile bike ride. Then again, this might put people to sleep. This might not be the best time. If you're going to bed, this is the perfect podcast for you.
Do not listen while operating heavy machinery.
So, okay, how about just a brief recap of where we've been and where we're going?
Okay.
We thought it would be appropriate to kind of start at this point because we have just crossed 1,000 mile mark. We're probably about 1,015 miles or so.
Which puts us about 400 miles past Melbourne, as they say here.
Yep, and we're probably about 300 miles south of Adelaide. If you have a map, check those places out, or if you're smart, you already know where they are. Our next big step will be up to Adelaide and then crossing the Nola Bar, and we'll discuss that in detail later. But that's kind of where we stand right now as far as where we've been. We've covered 1,000 miles. We have about 9,000 to go, so we're only about 10% done.
And we've used almost 20% of our allotted time.
and more than 10% of our allotted money.
60% of the money.
Yeah, no, that's all part of the trip. We'll make it work somehow. You know, we anticipated it taking longer when we first started, or at least the beginning portions we thought would take longer. Plus, we've actually had, you know, a couple illnesses part of the way. Pat, what was your illness of choice?
My illness of choice was Giardia.
Woohoo!
Woohoo!
And he had to go on 2 separate pill regimens because the first one didn't quite take care of it. Then he started getting sick again. Then he got a second one. I've just started coming down with something, although it seems to be much shorter. I tell you, there's nothing more unpleasant in the world than realizing you have to ride 40 or 50 miles in a day when you feel like butt. It is an awful, awful experience. Napoleon once said, fatigues make cowards of us all, and it's so true. It's amazing the thoughts that creep into your mind when you're 30 miles into a 50-mile day when you feel awful, and you're basically at the point where you're like, if there was a plane home right now, I would take it. This freaking sucks. But then you start feeling a little better, and of course, all those thoughts wane and you move on. It's pretty funny how all that works.
I never had those thoughts. I never thought that once. Plane home, you coward.
You're a filthy liar. Yeah, well, I don't know. As far as the trip's been going so far, I guess initially one of my biggest worries was if we could actually complete it. Did you have those thoughts at all?
Well, I mean, as we always talk, completing was never as important to me as it was to you.
Yeah, I guess we've had different goals from the outset. To me, it's been incredibly important to complete it. I think for you, it's been more about just the adventure and the journey, right?
That's right.
So I guess it's relative to what you want. And I remember my biggest worry when we began was, it's 10,000 miles. Let's kid around each other. It's not, that's like basically going across the United States, back, and then across the United States again. I mean, it's not a small trip, and I was wondering if I was physically capable of doing something like this. And for the first few hundred miles, it was certainly in the back of my mind, but I think we've gotten to the point now where we've done 1,000 miles. We're 10% done. We're only stronger than we were, and it's certainly something we're capable of at this point. I know that I can do this 9 more times. It's just a matter of time and money. Those are the only limiting factors right now. Do you feel the same?
Well, it's always just been a question of, you know, not am I strong enough to do it, am I just stronger than you?
So that if I quit, you can say you just were doing the right thing and stopping with me?
Exactly.
Right, well, F you.
Because completing was never as important to me. I just never wanted to be the anchor on the thing, you know? So I'm glad I'm not the anchor on the thing. I think we're pretty well matched, though, if I could say so. I am a little bit faster. I'm a little stronger.
Yeah, I'll be the first person to admit it. Your legs are a little bit stronger than mine. You're normally, maybe half of it's because you're drafting that off of me every day.
I believe what Scott is referring to are my Schwarzenegger-esque legs that have developed. I mean, they're bigger than most grown men's, you know, chests.
Does Schwarzenegger have polio? Pat is a little stronger man on the right. I'll absolutely say it. And I think he could probably go a little farther each day if we weren't doing this together. But like we said, it's not what it's about. You're here for the trip so we can be closer brothers.
Something like that.
Along the same side, anyone who's seen our video podcast, we weren't the most svelte individuals when we started this trip, and it's interesting to see over the 1,000 miles there's a mosquito. We're outside recording this, by the way, and the flies and mosquitoes are being extra persistent today. We both probably lost quite a bit of weight already, and it's amazing to see the changes that occur in your body when you do that, from flexibility to muscle tone to range of motion and everything like that. You just they all sound very obvious and something you'd absolutely think, but it's one thing to talk about, it's another thing to actually feel it, and it's amazing to see the body evolve with a little bit of adversity is thrust upon it.
Yeah, I mean, there's all that, but, it's the spare tires where I'm measuring it, and I don't see much reduction in that yet. I mean, you can tell a little bit, pants button a little easier and stuff, but whatever the scales say, whatever the look on your face says, whatever I can touch my toes now, there's still the tire there, man. Until that tire is really small, I'm not going to feel like I accomplished a lot.
Well, in the future, we'll be crossing the NOLA bar, which, if you've been reading our stuff, you'll know means it's Latin for nolus arbor, meaning without trees. And we'll be crossing that, which is basically about 10 times the size of Death Valley, and every bit as hot. It can get 120 degrees plus Fahrenheit out there, and I got a feeling we're going to be pushing through a new level in that area.
I'm not so sure. I think we're going to be the first year in 100 years to have snow across the NOLA bar in the summer.
Which brings up an interesting point, the weather. Down here, naturally, the seasons are reversed, being in the southern hemisphere. And
it sounds like a ridiculous claim in the beginning, but until you realize this cold front that's been constantly right on top of
us. For 2 months.
Yeah. I've been cold half this trip in the Australian summer. It's been unreal.
It's quite literally to the point where many days we're wishing you were wearing a sweater. And it is the equivalent being December 30th, by the way, day before New Year's. But it is the equivalent to about July in the States.
Yeah, I mean, add 6 months, so it's the end of June right now.
And people are like, well, Australia is so south, but we actually looked it up last night. Where we are in Australia in the southern hemisphere is about equivalent to where San Francisco would be in the northern hemisphere. So even though there's a lot of different factors involved, with weather, it just goes to show you, it's not like we're in Antarctica or anything, and it is shockingly cold. So we'll see if these weather anomalies continue. They keep claiming it's going to be 100 degrees tomorrow, and it's beautiful 70 degrees today, so we'll see. But yeah, as far as the weather goes, it's certainly been colder than we expected as well. I think another interesting thing is we've traveled 1,000 miles, but the flora and fauna have changed drastically. And often at a moment's notice, it's pretty incredible.
It's almost like they know when you cross a boundary or something to change at this exact point, because it'll be a couple hundred yards where it'll go from just forest, really super high and you can't see an inch through them, to where everything's like brushland and nothing's higher than your waist and it's kind of sparse. And it'll happen over a course of half a kilometer. It's like there's a line drawn.
And the animals change just as quickly. You'll go from dairy cows to Amazon rainforest, and you'll hear the birds change. You'll hear the bugs will change. Everything is instantaneously different. It's pretty phenomenal. Speaking of which, there's been a couple really unusual birds that have been killing me, and I don't know if Pat quite feels the same way. One of them, I call it the squeaky wheelbird. If you've ever pushed a wheelbarrow,
how does the squeaky make the noise? Do the Piedmont bird calling contest.
the Leonard J. Waxtec bird calling contest. Okay, here's my best impression of the bird. It just goes, and it sounds like someone's pushing a squeaky shopping cart or a squeaky wheelbarrow, and it's identical. And there's also another bird that sounded like a cell phone on buzz about 15 feet away. Like, it would just go... And you swear to God, I kept thinking a cell phone was buzzing out there, which is another interesting point. It kind of brings up the whole... We're products of our environment, and we're all pop culture, and everything I've been equating it to is just things that we've come across in life so far. So
there's the only one that's really bothered me is there's one that sounds like almost like a computer trying to make a bird noise, and I want to leave it the mystery. I could look on the internet and find out what it is, but I want to leave it a mystery in the hope that sometime in the next 8 months or so, I see the bird actually making the noise, because then I'll know. And my bird calling contest impression would be.
Right. Moving on.
I practiced it. I'm good.
Another thing about these forests, I cannot stress enough. I cannot fathom how the original explorers and the aboriginals and everyone lived and was able to navigate through some of these denser lands. I literally think that absolutely nobody lived there, because we'll be driving through a road that goes through some of these denser areas, and there, with a chainsaw, with a high powered chainsaw, it would take you 5 minutes to get 5 feet. With a machete, you wouldn't go anywhere. You would die in 30 feet. It amazes me how all these different animals, how these different plants just thrive here. Like it is the Garden of Eden here for almost every species, and it's pretty cool. But I just don't know how people lived here and managed to do it properly. Another animal, one of our favorites, the flies.
The flies.
We've talked about this on some of the podcasts, but...
It can't be overstressed. No. It is definitely a major part of the atmosphere of this trip, these flies.
Yeah, it's like trying to explain to someone the heat in a very bad desert or the rain in the Amazon. It's just, it is...
They think, oh, well, I've been hot before, and, you know, I know what rain is. It's right. It's different, though.
But it's just different. You can't... And these aren't flies. You think of the pacified... domestic American fly, they are a joke here. They wouldn't last 5 minutes before every single one of them was dead. The flies here are so persistent, and they're smart. They are smart. The drafting flies.
Drafting flies,
absolutely. Talk about that.
Well, the flies, you're on the bike, so you figure, I just need to speed up a little bit, or good, I'm going down this hill, I'm going to leave all these flies in the dust. They'll go and they will fly onto your bags and on the back of your shirt and everywhere that you can't see. They'll get out of your eyesight and out of the wind and grip on with these iron hooks and wait until you slow down again, until you slow down enough, and then they'll fly back out into your face. I mean, it's a learned behavior, and I don't know what they like about us. I mean, if I knew what they liked about us, I would change it.
I'm guessing it's the salt and the moisture. Because when you're sweating, they are all over you. They're, without exaggeration, there can literally be 300 to 500 flies either on or around you during these bad areas.
And what confuses me the most about it all, though, isn't the flies, it's the Australians. That they don't do anything about them. That they're just happy to keep waving their hand in front of their face for an hour rather than just put on a mosquito net when they know they're going out to somewhere where there's going to be flies.
Adults smirk, children stare when we're wearing these bug nets to keep them off our face. But it's the most logical thing to do.
They're not immune from them, you know?
No.
They're standing around, you know, swapping them off their face every 2 seconds rather than just... putting the little net on.
By the way, is an actual Australian term called the bush salute.
Yep.
Or the Australian salute. What do they call it?
Both.
Yeah. The Australian or the bush salute is they literally it's waving your hand in front of your face to get rid of the flies. It's such an epidemic around here. But the flies are awful and they're persistent and they tend to fixate on small areas of skin. They'll find it and they want it and they won't go away. Often it's an inch up your nose, half an inch down your ear, somewhere in your mouth,
and they want it,
or in the eyeball. Those are their favorite places and they will not stop till they get it. So I don't like flies. animals we were expecting to see, but we haven't seen a lot of. You know, they keep talking about, you can't turn on the Discovery Channel without saying the 10 most deadly snakes in the world are all in Australia, the 10 most deadly spiders. We saw one snake on the first day of the trip on the side of the road.
Red-bellied black snake.
The red-bellied black snake. As someone pointed out before we even got there, they pulled over and they said, "Hey, mates, there's a red-bellied black snake up there. Be careful." We gave it the appropriate girth and continued on, but that's the only snake we've seen. Matter of fact, we're laying in the middle of a field right now doing a podcast, probably prime snake territory, and we haven't seen any. So I think the danger is quite a bit overstated. As a matter of fact, I think we read before we left, on average, 2 people a year die due to snake bites.
Yeah.
2 out of 20 million die due to snake bites, and often those are due to people intentionally trying to handle them. Children not knowing what they're doing because they're too small to deal with it.
Or tourists bush camping not realizing they're on top of a snake hole.
I actually have never heard of that happening, to be honest with you. Like, it's a rare thing, so we really think that's been overstated. I don't know. What else? We've met lots of interesting people. Any thoughts on people?
People are good. You know, people are weird, my interactions with people here, because it's like sometimes you really want to talk, and they just sort of give you placating response answers, like, "I want you to shut up now," and then other times it's reverse, where I just want them to shut up and let me do whatever I was doing.
And of note, they and tend they to want to talk to us most when we've taken a long break and we really need to get going.
As soon as we're ready to get going,
flip the leg over the bike and you're about to clip in and keep going. "Hey, what's this? Wow, looks like you've gone a long way." And
it's always the same first couple of questions and you're never quite sure how to answer it. Because if you say too far, then they think you're crazy. If you don't say enough, they make comments about how, you know, you're never going to get there. And it depends entirely on the person, how they respond, and there's no way to judge that in front.
And I don't want this to make me sound like I think I'm more important than I am, because I know I'm nothing. Nobody knows me. But there's a certain very minor local celebrity when you get into these small towns or these towns when you're in these bikes, where it's just that celebrity is the wrong word, but there's a lot of general interest. People want to talk to you. And you find yourself going back and back to the standard response because you've said it 100 times before. You almost tailored your answer. But I can see where, like, celebrities and famous people who are actors and everything, how they get so sick and tired of just people continually bombarding them, which I'm sure is 10 times worse than anything we get, and just wanting the same questions, wanting pictures, wanting this and that. I could totally see myself becoming one of those less than appreciative, you know, celebrities in the States, you know, where
you have to be famous for something first.
Like I said, we're not famous. I'm not claiming to be famous, even in the tiniest sense of the word. We've got like 10 people listening to this. I just mean, we garner enough attention here that I can understand why more famous people that are bombarded daily because of their celebrity, would be almost be turned off by people continually, and where we feel they should be appreciative, be like, "Dude, these are your fans. You should appreciate them. You should answer, take pictures, do whatever they want." But it becomes formulaic after a while. You just give the response and you move on. And I feel how people could take that as unappreciative or a lack of caring. But it just gets to the point where you can't delve in like it's the first time someone's asked you how far you've been or anything like that. So, am I crazy here?
No, and frankly, a lot of them deserve jerk responses anyway, because a lot of them are jerks.
Oh, well, let's talk a little about jerks, since we're talking about people we've met. Over here, there are things called P plates and L plates. L is for learner, P is for permit. They're basically, as far as we can put together, P plate or L plates for learners around 16. I think P plates around 18. And they're basically the teenagers. I would say 90% of the ill will towards us, which has been very minute, I don't want to make it sound like it's more than it is because of these young kids. And
it's P platers more than L platers. I think L platers are still nervous enough on the road that they don't want to get into it. But the P platers are
just cocky enough, and they've got 6 guys in the car. They're the ones that will swerve towards you to see if they get a response.
Stick their head out and yell just as they get next to you.
Flick you off as they pass you. Honk the horn really loud just as they pass you to see if they can get a response. And you know what? I was a bit of a punk kid as a teenager, too, so I try not to garnish too much internal ill will towards these guys, but it's pretty frustrating, and everyone else has been genuinely pretty cool, and it's amazing to see. In the States, I don't imagine, I think teenagers have too much other things to do than to drive around trying to harass bicyclists. I don't think of that as something I would have done in high school.
Oh, you wouldn't have gone out looking for it, but if you were driving by a bicyclist, you wouldn't have said, you know, hey man, throw your Coke at this guy, or...
Throw a Coke.
Tell him to get a horse as you go by.
Okay, I might have yelled, get a horse, but... Okay, maybe a little bit. All right, I love the P-Plates. You guys are great.
I don't. I still hate them. They get a finger salute every time, and it makes me feel a little bit better inside, and then it's easier to forget about them.
You know, beyond the P-Plates, I think there's probably only one memorable person that we both can think of that has intentionally gone out of their way to give us a very hard time for being American. That's one person out of the millions we've probably passed. You know who I'm thinking of?
Thinking of the guy in whatever, the first place I got sick.
Yeah, where you got the Giardia.
Yeah, Neruma or whatever.
Right. Yeah, talk about him.
He was just a drunk guy giving us shit for being American. He wanted to know why we didn't sign the Kyoto Agreement and why we elected George Bush twice and you know, how come, you know, we're in Iraq, and he didn't want to accept any answers. He didn't want to move on to any other topics.
We were trying to be polite at first, and he just
wanted us to answer for every crime.
The irony, too, is in, I'm a little politically ignorant sometimes, but he laid into us the very first thing he said. He said, oh, you guys Americans? We said, yeah, we're Americans. He goes, why didn't you guys sign the Kyoto Agreement? And I said, I don't know. You'd have to ask George Bush. It's really not my call. He goes, oh, that doesn't count. You guys are the largest polluters in the world, and in Kyoto, and this and that. And Pat brought out a little bit later, Australia had not signed the Kyoto Agreement at the time either.
No.
But that didn't seem to bother him. Or the fact that Australia is the largest...
polluters per capita.
Yeah, energy users per capita and water users per capita in the entire world. But Anyways, it was a killed mosquito.
Thank you. He just hit me in the head is what he did.
No, he was biting into your head. Whatever, I'll let him bite you next time.
Please do.
But, you know, that's a huge exception. Other than that, people have actually been really cool. Pat had a guy he knew online from one of your motorcycle clubs.
AvidRiders.com, Adventure Riders.
Let us stay at his place for 5 days. He actually even bought beds so we'd have a place to sleep. He bought us a couple meals. He was just a great all-around guy that just really let us come in and share his home. And this is in Melbourne, a very expensive city. And like we said, we don't have a lot of money. It was really, really appreciated. And it was a really cool thing for him to do.
It was one of the cooler things of the trip. So if you live in Adelaide or Perth or Darwin and you want to be part of this cool trip too, you know, give us a line. We can stay at your place for 5 days for free as well.
And you can buy us meals and beds.
You can buy us meals and beds and beer too. We'll allow that. We allow that sort of thing.
Yes, we're very open and willing to accept new things and stuff. Yeah, so as far as the people go, I don't know. We've had a lot more offers, too. People, you know, unfortunately, most of the offers we get are right as we're leaving a town to go to the next town. We'll literally be packing up from a camping site or driving, just starting out, and we're at a gas station getting a Gatorade or something ready to go to the next town. And someone's like, hey, you should come stay at our place for the day. But we're woefully behind, and we have to keep going. So... maybe we'll get a little better karma in the future and people will catch us for coming into town. My other favorite guy, probably one of my favorite guys, is the Korean War vet we ran into.
In that,
That
lunch stop rest?
Yeah. We ran into this guy, 76-year-old Australian Korean War vet, still very coherent, but just a typical 76-year-old in a lot of ways. And he probably, it's one of those things where he saw us we had already been there about 30 minutes and we are ready to go, but he comes and saddles down next to us at the bar and orders a pint at probably 11:30 in the morning and starts talking to us, and he's just fascinated with with what we're doing, and he was just a really cool guy.
The best part is, at first, he didn't realize we were on bicycles, though.
Yeah.
We were talking about going across the Nullabur with the bartender. He comes out and sits down and says, oh, you'll be fine, just carry some extra water in your car or whatever. And the bartender goes, no, mate, they're on push bikes. And the guy just, his jaw just drops, and he goes, push bikes across the Nullabur?
Which is 1,000 miles of desert, and he was like, please take the train, which we've actually had quite a few people literally plead with us to take the train and get across the Nullabur because they think we're quite literally committing suicide by going across it.
We've had people turn and laugh at us when we tell them the winds are going to be with us this time of the year, which we've confirmed by wind charts. We've confirmed by people that were just there a couple of weeks ago.
Books. I've read two books. Both of them were saying the wind's going to be to our tail going across, but all the locals seem to think we're crazy, which bleeds and segues very nicely into another pet peeve of mine, is people's, A, their perception of the terrain, and their almost delight in telling us what we're coming up to.
Yeah.
First, their perception of the terrain. Something we found out very quickly after being very disappointed many a time was that locals, it doesn't matter if they live there 40 years, it doesn't matter if they're professional drivers, truck drivers, whatever the case may be, they have absolutely no idea about the train. If it's going to be hilly, if it's going to be flat, what the case is going to be. How many times do we have someone say, oh yeah, you got it, straight ahead, 50 miles, there's nothing. And then we have 3 days of torrential, devastating hills.
I mean, all the time. I mean, it's whatever they say, it's almost the opposite every time.
Right. And they seem to get this certain pleasure out of telling us there's going to be hills ahead, or the wind's going to be coming towards us, or it's going to rain, or it's going to be hot, or it's going to be cold. And I've come across the same phenomenon in the States, and I think it's something that lies deep within the psyche of most people, is that they almost want you to fail or be miserable to help justify their lonely place in the world. And I'm not saying that this is, and you may disagree with me, Pat, but I'm not saying this is intentional. They're not saying it's going to be hilly knowing it's going to be flat. But there's something about people that unless someone else is miserable, it's hard for them to be happy. And you'll see it. They'll say, hey, you've got about 50 kilometers of some real hills coming up. And they have this giant smirk on their face that they may not even be aware of as they tell you. Because people like to see other people unhappy. It makes them more happy. I don't understand the psychology behind it, even though I was a psychology major. But it's a pretty phenomenal thing where they delight in either your pursuit of happiness or your potential failure.
I won't even attempt to go at motives here because I don't feel I know them. I think it's every bit as often. It's just that they feel they've got a good intro into a conversation now, like they broke the script by being able to say there's lots of hills ahead.
Because they assume everyone else is going to say it's going to be great, have a good time or something.
No, because now they actually have some input into the trip, so they feel good, like they're actually part of the conversation now. Or you know, it's just sometimes they know that maybe that extra pressure is going to be, you know, a good thing for you. I think I'm not going to necessarily say it's, you know, delight in seeing other people fail for everyone, but there is a certain pleasure people get out of giving bad news, so I won't try to attempt the motive to it.
I think you're far less cynical than me as far as the human psyche, but whatever the case may be, they give almost the exact opposite advice of what they should as far as what's coming up, whether intentional or not. Nice people, though. They always say it with a smile. That's the beauty. You've got about 50 kilometers of hills coming in front of you, or, wow, it's going to be 100 degrees today, you know, always with a smile. You want to punch them.
You know, in the worst, I don't even ask anymore. They just like to offer it straight out.
No, absolutely.
Like, I don't even ask about terrain ahead, but they love to tell you.
Moving forward here, away from the people, which, on a final note, I really did want to say 99.9% of the people have been awesome. They're great. They're genuine. They're interested. They go out of their way to help you. But it's funner to talk about the crazies.
Easier
than not fun ways.
Yeah.
I want to talk about my McDonald's phenomenon. I think I'm onto something here. Would you at least agree with me a little bit here?
I'm not sure what you're talking about yet.
About the trash.
The trash? Oh, yes.
Am I onto something?
You're onto something.
Okay. Often going into these towns, I mean, you'll be out, I mean, you're in the middle of nowhere. You've never heard of these towns before. You have no idea if it's a small town, if it's a big town, if they're going to have anything to eat, if there's going to be a gas station and a motel, or if there's going to be nothing. But I've started noticing something. One of the beauties of the pace at which you travel on a bicycle is that you absorb a lot more of your environment. And what I've seen is that there's a very strong correlation between where you see McDonald's trash on the side of the road and how close you are to McDonald's. As far as I can tell, about 10 miles from any given McDonald's, if you were to draw a circular radius and then mark the roads away from that McDonald's, that's about where all the trash is. So you'll start riding into town.
All in a very, I mean, literally, it's a couple hundred yard zone.
It's crazy. You'll start seeing empty fry boxes, empty drinks, Big Mac containers, whatever the case may be.
And it doesn't matter if you go through a town and instead of a McDonald's, they have a KFC or they have a Hungry Jack's or any other fast food.
Hungry Jack's is Burger King over here, by the way.
Or any other fast food or other food takeout establishments. It doesn't happen. It only happens with the McDonald's.
With the McDonald's. And you'll start seeing it and you'll be like, oh my God, a McDonald's is coming up in 10 miles. And within 10 miles, we'll be there. And then you'll leave on the backside of town after the McDonald's and you'll see that same trash trail about 10 miles on the backside. It's phenomenal. On a side note, as we just said, Hungry Jack's is the name of Burger King here. It's an exact same restaurant. There's nothing different except they call it Hungry Jack's. And the only thing that we can surmise from it is that Burger King would somehow be insulting to
the royal family.
The royal family or someone underneath the royal crown here, you know, just because it's got a kingly sound to it. Imagine that. It's got a royal sound to it, and they probably did some polls, and people said that it was offensive. So interesting how corporations work like that. So what else we got to talk about, Pat? Ah, I've got a good one here. We can both input on this one. There is something beautiful about what your body does, or at least how much it will appreciate food and beverage when you are continually, when your body continually has a dearth of nutrients. It loves food, is what I'm trying to say.
And it's not just that you have a craving for food. You might not even necessarily feel that hungry until you sit down and eat.
Yep.
But whatever you're eating at that moment is the best food you've ever had in your life.
It can be crappy French
fries. No exaggeration.
No. And I mean, when
it just like, you can have a bite of this food, and God could descend from the heavens and go, "What would you like to eat?" And you would say, "I need more of this and nothing else forever."
Forever. Right. We've all gone for a long workout. Just imagine going for a really good workout. You come home, you take a shower, you start cooking something up. As soon as that flavor starts hitting your nose, you become ravenously hungry, where you weren't even that hungry before. And that food, it tastes that good. I don't know if anyone here has seen Defending Your Life. I'm forgetting the main... If you see Defending Your Life, they're in purgatory.
Kirk Douglas.
No, it's not Kirk Douglas. Waiting to go to heaven or go back to earth, but all the food is perfect. Everything is just right because they're making things very nice from why they're making a decision. It is like that. Food is wonderful. It can be bad French fries. It can be a candy bar. It can be 3-month-old beef jerky, which we've eaten all those. All taste awesome. It's interesting how the body gets what it wants in some ways, you know.
We're learning tricks on our bikes, too, which I find particular joy in.
What, you mean doing a two-foot wheelie?
Doing a two-foot wheelie. I couldn't do that on a BMX before I left, and now I'm doing that on a 700cc road bike. That makes me feel good. Bunny hopping off curbs and getting both wheels in the air. That makes me feel like a badass, you know? And I just love that we're doing it on the big touring bikes with racks and everything. But yes, we're learning tricks. We're gonna do some crazy mad skills by the time we get back. Wheelies, and we did stoppies, and we can do bunny hops off curbs, and we can stop and do track stands. I mean, we can do everything.
I don't even know what half these mean. I know a stoppie. Isn't a stoppie when you hit your front brake and you manage to stop the bike?
Where you get the back wheel up.
The back wheel suspended in the air. You're not moving at all. And then you lay the back wheel down.
Right.
Okay.
That's the stocking.
Nice.
And the bunny hop is both wheels off.
Right.
And the track stand is where you don't move at all.
Oh, okay, so you just stop there.
Like, you just stopped and balanced.
Like the courier in New York City waiting at the red light, not moving at all, that guy.
Exactly.
Okay.
We can do all of that now.
Well, in a very limited manner.
And it's only going to get better.
The same way a child can be a novelist. They can put the words on the paper and write the format. Did you fart?
I'm not going to cop to that on air.
Oh my God, it stinks. Ugh. We're outside. So, moving on, what about our equipment? What pleasantries and failures have we had that we weren't anticipating?
Oh, I'm getting more and more upset with Peter White, the builder of my wheels. First, I have like 6 flats in a row because there's metal shavings coming out of the holes.
Well, explain that in more detail so people know what you mean.
I spent a lot of money on really nice tires, and so I made all these proclamations before we left that I'm not going to have any flats whatsoever.
As a matter of fact, you spent more on your tires, wheels, and hubs than I did on my entire bike, if I'm not mistaken.
Me too. I spent more on the tire, wheels, and hubs than on the rest of my setup.
What about Absolutely. Did it cost you for just your tire, wheels, and hubs?
The tires were like $750. The wheels built with the hubs and everything were like $750, and then the tires were $65 each.
So we're looking at $850. My entire bike cost $700.
Yeah, my whole bike cost about $800.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I put the wheels on it, doubling the cost of the bike.
Right. So after you spend all this money on these $850 wheels and tires, what happens?
I get like 6 flats in the first 500 miles. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Every 75K, I've got another flat. And it's because these little metal shavings in the holes where the spokes are... work their way up and through the rim tape and just barely going through, so it would wear through a hole on the inside of the tube after, 50K or so. It would wear a new hole through.
So where they drilled the holes on the rim so they could...
I don't know the cause. I don't know if the cause was drilling or if the cause was, whatever. But there were holes in the rim where the holes are for the spokes. Metal flakes were coming up out of some of those. So... that caused a bunch of flats. Figured that one out. Got all the metal flakes out. Put new rim tape in. And now the biggest humiliation is my back tire's got a wobble in it. My back wheel has a wobble in it now.
This is the first I've heard of this.
I know. I've been leaving it off. I haven't been mentioning it until now. But in Adelaide, I'm going to have to go find someone to true my back wheel. My 40-spoke overkill, I never even want to think about wheels have caused me 2 major problems already.
And my
only 2 major problems.
Right. I had the accident before we left, and I had to replace my front wheel, which everything that Pat mentioned up there with all of his costs, $850 for the set, my front wheel cost me $40, and I've had 0 problems with it since we started.
I don't hope, because it would slow me down too, but I would get satisfaction if both of your wheels just exploded at some point in the future.
Well, one did explode.
Yes, you did have a tire explode.
I don't think I covered this on a podcast. What's interesting is that about 5 miles out of a town after a 50-mile ride, the timing was fortuitous because we happened to be so close to a town, but I was riding along. In the morning when we'd gotten up, I noticed that my back tire was just a little underinflated, so I put about what I felt was 10 more pounds of pressure in it, and that worked fine all day. And then I was literally riding, after going down a hill at about 30 miles an hour, I was coming up the other side at about 5 miles an hour, and my rear tire quite literally exploded.
I was 100 yards behind him. I heard it. It sounded like a
firecracker.
Yeah.
There was a 2-inch gash in the sidewall of the tire, not on the tread, like if I hit a piece of glass or something, and the tire literally exploded. So I limped into the next town, basically pushing the bike in, and there was nothing. I'm a tiny town with just a motel, and there happened to be a car mechanic shop, in the town, and I walked over there and I said, I know you guys are just cars, but is there any chance you have a bike tire? And this old crusty guy, I mean, just exactly what you would imagine in a small town, car shop, goes into the back and comes out with a wheel about a minute later with this old tire on it that happened just to fit my rim. And, as luck would have it, it lasted 100 miles until we got to the next place. That was a real town, and it worked out. I mean, that was very fortuitous, because if it hadn't worked out, I would have had to take a bus to the next town. I would have taken a bus back, put the tire on there, because as I'm sure you all know, at this point, our goal is to complete the circumnavigation without any assistance in our forward travel. So I would have had to go forward and come back just to fix the tire. But we've had quite a few lucky little spells like that to kind of help us push us in the right direction.
So. If I could just go back for a second, though, one talk back. I wonder if anyone's going to make the connection here between...
Well, they will if...
Are you... I don't know what connection you thought I was going to say.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Connection between learning a bunch of new neat tricks on my bicycle and my wheels got a wobble.
Oh. That is interesting.
I was just sort of bragging about bunny hops and wheelies and then complaining that there's a wobble.
Yeah. Note to self.
I only put those together right now myself.
Nice. Another pet peeve of mine out here. Australians have no rhyme or reason to how they pronounce words.
No.
The written word and the syllables on the page have no correlation to how they're actually spoken.
And it's not just like between, you know, an American trying to say them and an Australian trying to... Between different Australians, they will all say the words differently.
My favorite...
And correct you when you say it different than them.
They revel in the opportunity to correct your pronunciation of a word. In particular, town names. Probably my favorite one... And say it how you want. I will spell it first, and then you can, your own mind's eye can determine how you would say it. Geelong.
Oh, that's Geelong.
Geelong, or I would even say...
Some say Geelong.
Geelong. Some say Geelong. Some say...
Geelang.
Geelong, Geelong, Geelang, and... Anytime, and they all correct you in the same way. I'm like, is this Geelong? Mate, it's Geelong. If you say Geelong, nobody's going to have any idea what you're saying. Oh, really? Because I just said Geelong, and you understood me just fine, you know?
And the next person you'll say, okay, I'm going to say it like I'm supposed to. It's Geelong, so you go, so how much further is it to Geelong? Oh, you mean Geelong.
Geelong. It's Geelong, mate. Nobody's going to understand
it. Geelong? Why would you say it like that?
Melbourne is not Melbourne. It's not Melbourne.
It's not Melbourne.
It's actually Melbourne.
Is it Melbourne?
Yeah, it's Melbourne. Okay. I think it's a connective. Even though it's spelled Bourne at the end, it's Melbourne. And the list goes on and on. I mean, another big one, N-O-W-A, and then the second word is N-O-W-A. Nawa-nawa. Oh, no, that's now-now, you know? And then we got a couple hundred miles away, and we said now-now, and someone's like, you mean nawa-nawa?
I grew up there.
I grew up. We're like, are you kidding me? So it was cute at first, but it's because people's insistence on correcting you and saying nobody will understand you that it's beginning to frustrate me a little bit here, but I try to smile and continue along, and I think we'll be okay. So as far as other equipment goes, our chains, I'm shocked. I don't know if anyone's listening to this has done quite a bit of riding before, but our chains, they change stretch over time. And you wouldn't really think that because it's all steel, but they do stretch, and you get shifting problems because of it, and eventually the chain will snap and become unusable. We're at 1,000 miles. Our chains are almost dead.
And, yeah, we haven't really been oiling them very much. I think it's supposed to be almost a daily thing.
Maybe we should start
weekly at best.
Right, which would actually probably make it easier to ride, too, having a very smoothly oiled chain because there's so much friction there. But
I can't use my bottom four gears in the back because it's stretched too much.
Yeah, so we really weren't expecting that. So the chains, the seats have been really nice. If you're interested, if anyone's hearing this that it does tour or is considering touring or whatever the case may be, Brooks Saddle, they're English, B-R-O-O-K-S, Brooks. They make amazing saddles. They're all leather.
You mean Bro Oaks?
Bro Oaks saddles?
Nobody will understand
Nobody
Brooks.
Will understand what Brooks means. They're great saddles. They're leather. They've got a lot of give in them. They're just top end, and they are worth every penny you'll spend on one. So go get it.
And perhaps the best part is because they're leather, they wear in and they get a really cool aged, like I'm serious, I know what I'm doing look to them.
Aged?
That's what I said.
Aged. So that's pretty cool there. I don't know. I feel like we're losing a little steam on our topics here. Can you think of any other big things? Let's talk about kind of where we're going and what our thoughts are.
Adelaide and Perth.
Yeah.
When we get to Perth, man, that's going to be a big relief for me.
Yeah.
Then it's serious at that point. It won't be, even if we don't finish everything at that point, which I hope we do, but even if, you know, broke both my legs or something 10 miles out of Perth, at that point, at least it's, you know, serious. It was significant. It wasn't some failed, like, you know, you didn't do your homework sort of thing.
Giant mosquito on your cheek.
Why don't you slap it?
I was going to. I wanted to. Perth, if you look at a lot of people don't know, but Australia is almost exactly the same size as the United States, or at least the lower 48. And from Sydney to Perth is quite literally the equivalent of I'm saying literally a lot in this podcast. It is the equivalent from going to, from like Los Angeles to Washington, D.C.
Literally.
Or something. Quite literally. And that's a big ride, so I think there will be a significant sense of accomplishment at that point when we make it there. But we're not even halfway there yet, so we've got lots to do. And from Perth, we'll be going up to Darwin, which is like going from Los Angeles to Chicago, and then back over to the East Coast to like where about New York City would be, and then we're following the East Coast all the way back down to Sydney, which is about where Florida would be. So, or Georgia, or right around there. But anyways, there's a lot to come. And you'll get to hear us droning on for that whole period, either from video or audio podcast. Good times.
Good times. You are now minute 46 in your workout.
Yeah. Minute 46.
Time for that final push to the end.
Let's put a big push up here. Well, I don't want to go long. I don't want to make it fill up an hour just... to fill up an hour. One other thing I could talk about. I got a few topics here. We're
going to talk about ordering pizza?
Yes.
But you keep working out. We'll eat the pizza.
I want to just touch upon, before we close out here, the pace of life here. This isn't on my list, but it just made me think of it. Their relative time and space relative to America.
Literally?
Quite literally, their time and space. Okay, first thing, I want to talk about the time and space thing. Australia is America 15 to 20 years ago. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I don't try to say people are backwards or anything like that. But you look around, and I would say they dress like we do. But other than that, from the houses to the stores to the music they listen to everything they do, you just feel like you step back in time a little bit.
I'm going to have to keep a solid list on this so we can make it more clear, but it's absolutely true. I'm going to have to start making a real list of specifics.
Right.
We'll mention on
the next trying to one, explain but... it doesn't really make much sense, but we will make a list because it's shocking. As a matter of fact, we had our suspicions confirmed where we were in a shop in Melbourne, not Melbourne, and a guy there said, "Oh, you're from America." He goes, "So does it feel like you're stepping back in time being here? Does it seem you know like America used to be or something like that?" And we did not prep him with the question. We did nothing. It came out of blue, and I was like, "Okay, even they know it a little bit." I'm guessing that somehow they know about it, and people have mentioned it before, and we're just something we're observing on our own. So it kind of lends a little credibility to our
or
thoughts.
Maybe he recently visited America and he felt like he was stepping into
the
future.
He couldn't figure out why Australia didn't have flying cars yet.
I mean, part of it's the internet, I think.
Internet's backwards.
It's impossible to get around here, at least a decent connection. It's unbelievable.
And, okay. Yeah.
I feel like you have to get in a fist fight sometimes to download a podcast.
Yeah, and we've been into internet shops where you literally bring in your laptop and you get to pay a premium to use your laptop versus using their equipment.
It's $8 an hour if you use their computer. It's $8 an hour to use your own laptop plus a $5 surcharge.
Plus a surcharge to use your own laptop versus your equipment. It's just a little pet peeve none of you probably care about, but it frustrates the heck out of us.
And then if you download too much, they'll come over and go, "You're slowing down the whole network. Could you not download anything, please?"
Right. And we've stayed at a couple hotels where, or motels, where they they give you a card and you can only download 100 megabytes before your internet turns off. It's shocking. So, anyways, that kind of goes back to it.
It's going to turn me into an illegal person here pretty soon. I'm just going to have to figure out how to crack networks.
Which, you've tried twice already with absolutely no luck whatsoever.
Zero success so far. But we got Google, man. Google will teach me everything eventually.
Just before it takes over the world, people already have.
It's already taking over my brain.
Google already scanned as we're recording as we speak, and they've already put blacklisted us on Google right now. They're that good.
They censored this part out.
So, but yeah, so I don't know. I compared to where we started, where we are, where we're going, I am actually pretty happy. Where we don't have as much money as we need, no. We're going a little slow,
yes.
But those can all be overcome. If we didn't have the will,
shall we overcome?
If we didn't have the desire to do this anymore, or if our everything was breaking down, if it was just, if there's a lot of factors that could have made this something we didn't want to do anymore, but I think everything other than those minor variables is making this a very enjoyable trip. So,
can we order pizza now?
I think we can go order pizza. If you are working out, you're at 51 minutes and 12 seconds, so you should be finishing your 10K by now, or you're slow. You should be
about mile 18 or so.
Mile 18 or so. And if you took our third and
biking, that is
your preferred suggestion for this podcast, which is falling asleep, you should be hitting REM cycle 2 right about now. So we will give
Even
you
streams happen at 4.
At 4.
A little ways to go.
But we're going to help you get to 4 or 3 by giving you some dulcet
sounds
of the ocean right now. And how about some subliminal messages? You are good.
Click on the Google ads.
Click on the Google ads.
Buy a t-shirt.
Writersofoz.com. Click on the Google ads. Jesus loves you.
Only if you click on the ads.
Yeah. You will go to hell. Jesus will send you to hell if you don't click on our Google ads. All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed learning a little bit more about our trip, and I suppose it's about time where we say adios, and we will send a little bit more love in your way in audio podcast form before we cross the Nola Bar, and we'll talk to you again.
And this is Pat.
And this is Scott reminding you to
order some pizza
and explore your world. Hey, take care, guys, and feel free to send us emails or anything you want. We love hearing from you.